Among the bills Governor Ducey signed into law last month is one that's going to require medical marijuana to be tested for contaminants. Those include pesticides and herbicides, heavy metals, even microbial contamination. Not following the law could lead dispensaries to face fines of up to $1,000 per violation. How could that affect patients, and could it lead to price increases for medical marijuana? In a moment, I'll talk with a journalist who has closely covered Arizona's marijuana industry. I start with Paul Seaborn, assistant professor at the University of Denver's Business School. He has studied what Colorado has done with its program. And, Professor, how important a premise is making sure that the marijuana does not contain herbicides and pesticides, for example?
I think it's a pretty important premise for two reasons. One, as we all know, this industry as a legal business is still relatively new. So I think there's still a lot to be learned and a lot of uncertainty about these products. And then secondly, because it's still considered federally illegal, you don't have the typical FDA or USDA oversight that would allow all states to benefit from some sort of federal program.
Is there a way, even a percentage increase in terms of the cost to growers and farmers when it comes to adding in the testing component?
Like everything else in the cannabis industry, these things tend to vary state by state. But here in Colorado, I know a typical test for one batch is going to be costing a producer around $100, maybe $120. And if you are a larger scale producer sending a number of different products and strains to these labs, you might be spending a couple thousand or more dollars per week. So yeah, it's not an insignificant cost.
And that would be passed down to the consumers.
Potentially, yeah. I think certainly in our market in Colorado and some of the other more mature markets, it's very competitive at the end customer level. And so in some cases, it may be passed on. In some cases, this may become an extra cost that the producers are going to have to cover themselves.
And without speaking for every producer, one would think this is part of the cost of doing business because they would rather have people enjoy their product and be able to use it safely than worry about whether there are problems down the road.
Yes, I think for most of the stakeholders here, this is a win-win situation. Companies that think they're doing things the proper way or want to confirm that they're doing things the proper way get that ability through testing. And certainly customers are much more informed and can be more confident in what they're receiving. And that makes regulators happy as well. I think the only catch can be, those folks who maybe hadn't really figured out some of these key issues around microbials or homogeneity, making the product consistent. And so, they may get a bit of a surprise, but I think that's probably par for the course.
That consistency is a really great word when it comes to this, because I really don't know when it comes down to, we often hear the comparison between marijuana and different forms of alcohol. And people talk about how because alcohol has been legal for so long, then we're able to make a more pure batch and make it more consistent. Is that sort of a work in progress when it comes to marijuana and medical marijuana?
Yes, absolutely. So over the years that we've had testing in Colorado, I think what we've heard is that the testers themselves have learned a lot about how to test in a very accurate, precise way so that their results are true. And then I think on the other side, producers have also learned a lot about how to produce products, particularly as you go from just the flower, which is coming straight as an agricultural product, and then transforming that flower into some sort of a concentrate or a butter that's then used in some sort of an edible product. There's a number of steps in that process where you might not end up with a really consistent homogeneous product, but testing has been a great way for everyone involved to try to figure those things out.
Have you noticed that more of these kinks are getting worked out in a way that it's being approached like almost any other business?
Yeah, that's certainly been the case. So if you looked at Colorado's testing, initially it was focused on potency, how strong is the product, and this concept of homogeneity, how consistent is it if you take one corner of the edible product versus another. They added in all sorts of tests around microbials and residues from solvents, and now most recently we're just moving into heavy metals. So there's been a real progression on what can be tested. But I think on the other side, there's also just been a improvement in terms of the consistency of what's coming out. But in the end, the raw ingredient here is an agricultural product, and even which leaf or which part of that product you start with is going to affect all those other things down the line. So there's still some degree of uncertainty here no matter what you do.
And did it take a while for testing companies to get a real foothold there?
It did. And I think that's a key challenge in all these states is you want to set up a program that works for the consumers and the producers of products, but it also has to work for those testing companies. If they don't see it as a viable business, or if for some reason the way the regulations are set up doesn't make it feasible for them, then you're sort of left in a vacuum. So it's very important right now at the state level to make sure that, you create a program that works as a business for testing companies. And maybe someday we'll get to a place where you could have a testing company serving multiple states, but we're a long way from that because of the federal status.
Do you feel like this is an industry that is in just the early stages of having a real explosion, or do you think it's going to hit some limit at some point, some wall?
So it's a great question, and I think you'll get a number of answers from whoever you talk to, but my sense would be that we haven't seen a real step backwards in any states that have moved towards legalization, and so we continue to generally move in one direction towards more and more legal access. So I think the federal piece is certainly a tough one, and it may be that some changes in the banking or the taxing treatment of the industry come first, and then, you know, more widespread legalization takes a little bit longer. But every time you see a new state approve either a medical program or a recreational program, that movement continues to go primarily in one direction.
That is Paul Seaborn, assistant professor at the University of Denver's Business School. Along with the law requiring medical marijuana in Arizona to be tested for contaminants, the governor also signed legislation that would extend the life of a medical marijuana card from 1 to 2 years. Ray Stern of Phoenix New Times is with me to talk about that and the industry in Arizona more generally. Ray, how big a difference could this card change make?
The biggest significance of it is the cost, for sure. This is going to be maybe dramatic for a lot of people, and it could cause more people to sign up with the program. The costs are basically dropping in half. They're not actually dropping in half. That's just the effect, basically. So you're still going to have to shell out $150 when you go down to get a medical marijuana card. And then there'll be a cost for the doctor at visit. And that could be maybe $75 to $150 or up. And then what's happening now is if you get the card after August 27th, then it will be good for 2 years. And so that essentially cuts the card cost in half, because before it was $150 a year.
Yeah. So lawmakers are doing this not necessarily to benefit cardholders, or are they? Is there some sort of, because I was even wondering if they just don't want as much money coming in from the program.
There has been a problem with too much money coming into the program. And whether or not certain, especially Republican legislators, want to help the program or not, I'm not going to say. I wasn't totally privy to all the sort of machinations of the way this legislation was put together. It was probably a compromise in some way to let this testing portion go through. But it does sort of solve the problem of having too much money come in. And this could be seen as a problem really no matter which side of the aisle you're on, because there's a fund that has been just piling up with money. It's got over $80 million in it, according to the 2020 budget, and it's not really being used for much. And so it's just an accumulation of money for no real purpose. And at the same time, patients are paying too much for their card for no real reason. So there's just, it's kind of a lose-lose. Republicans have been sort of wary about passing or trying to pass some legislation that would use that money, because the money would have to be used to benefit the program, and a lot of them aren't sure they want to do that.
This does not work in the same way that when we had the tobacco settlement, for example, and it was going to be used for education or used for whatnot. It actually would have to be used to benefit that particular program. You couldn't redistribute the fund in some way.
You could if you passed a law that allowed that to happen.
Okay.
But because this is a Voter Protection Act law, you need a 3/4 majority. That can be tough to get. The $150 fee was implemented by Will Humble, the former director of DHS, and he's expressed some regrets about setting it that high. He wanted to make sure there was enough money to cover the maintenance and operation of the program, and there wouldn't be a cost to taxpayers. But he made the mistake, he admits, of misestimating how many people would be in the program. He thought maybe about 40,000 would be the limit, and unfortunately that was kind of wildly off, and it's about 200,000 now.
So what medical professionals are going to be most affected by this potentially?
Well, naturopaths are the type of physician that will be most affected by this, because they've been the most interested and sort of popular physician to go to get a medical marijuana card for various reasons. They've just emerged as the go-to physicians as opposed to osteopaths or allopaths, for example. And so their revenue, you could look at it and say it's going to be cut in half. That's not quite true, though. I was talking to a certification doctor, Dr. Elaine Burns, and she told me that about 50% of her patients each year are new, and only 50% are returning. So as she put it, she's going to take a 50% cut on 50%. But she's also optimistic, and I kind of share her optimism, that there may be a pretty big surge of people who have been sort of cut out from the higher cost and that are now going to join the program. So the ranks could expand. People like Dr. Burns could actually see more patients.
Let's talk about some of the testing of the product that's going to go in now. I spoke with a professor in Colorado who's been really studying what they've done when it comes to testing. How important do you think it is for Arizona to look at some of the other states and see what they've done as maybe a potential best practices sort of thing?
I think that they should study it closely, and I imagine that the advisory council people will study it closely. There's been a few problems in other states with testing. There's been what has been referred to as choke points, where all of a sudden there's been too few labs or too little testing going on, and the dispensaries aren't getting the amount of product they want, and customers aren't getting the product. So there's a real desire to avoid that here. And although, of course, we want to find out if the products have any kinds of bad things in them, a recall would be bad for the industry. Mm-hmm. It would be bad publicity, and it would also be pretty bad for the dispensary if that were publicized.
Great. Race Turner, Phoenix New Times. Good to see you. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve.